Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Rohr. Albert Breer is back from training camp, and I have all sorts of questions for him. I went on a couple trips, and I'm going to make him go over my dinner menu and my expense list line by line. So
I will say this: one thing I do miss about my trip, Connor, is I love eating dinner by myself. And I know that that's probably like the most horrible thing to say, but there is like something to me that is so nice about just sitting at the bar at a restaurant. And I did a lot of dinners with people, like, you know, people that I have to see and all of that too. But one of the best things about being on a trip like that is eating dinner by yourself.
All right, I'm going to get into a brief discussion about this because I do have a point here. But I do want to mention at the top of the show, you guys might have heard some new voices in the feed earlier this week. Gilberto and Matt are some of our new staff writers who came on in February with the MMQB. They're going to be on the feed during the week as well with their own show. Albert and I will be with you on Mondays to wrap up the action, and we'll also have some commentary later in the week as well. But we wanted to bring you guys as much content as humanly possible. Gilberto and Matt are great, so give them a shot, and as always, leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. So yeah, Albert, you and I both have kids. I do think one of the hidden gems of the training camp trip is a hot meal sans distractions. Like, I will buy a newspaper sometimes. I buy the Sunday Times and the Star Ledger every Sunday, and I never get to read it. And so it's nice to just sit there, to read the newspaper, to eat a meal without being like, can I have that? Can I have that? Can I have that? And so it is. I think that's a hidden training camp gem for me.
Yeah, it's like it's like when you're younger, you would never go to the movies by yourself. And then, you know, at some point in your life, you discover that going to the movies by yourself was
the best.
Wonderful.
You know what Absolute I mean? Like, best.
Yeah, I feel like that's another thing you discover is that eating dinner by yourself is pretty awesome, too.
So the culinary highlight of my training camp trip, I would say, well, I did have a lunch with Mitch Goldish, at our editor, and in Foxborough. But so mm-hmm. We were leaving Patriots practice together, and I have a very weird thing where I have to consume all of my coffee for the day between 10 a.m. and 12. That's it. It's got to be between 10 a.m. and 12.
Not earlier than that?
Not earlier.
I'd like get a headache if I didn't have coffee before 10 a.m.
I have to push it. And then I basically chug it from 10 to 12, and then you cut it off hard, right at 12. So that way...
So it's like intermittent caffeine?
Intermittent caffeine, right? So it gets me over the hump for the afternoon, but then I'm not jacked up for nighttime, and I'm also like, I can get off the ground in the morning. You know, I can get myself off the ground in the morning. So I totally... Patriots practice, timing got changed, Beyonce was in town, and so everything got... reverse because she was playing at Foxborough. And so it's 11:58 and I didn't have my morning coffee. I'm spinning at this point, and I'm walking out, and we're in this sort of maze of Beyonce trucks that are setting up this massive stage show. And yep. All of a sudden, you know, I'm literally between shipping crates, and I come upon an artisan coffee place. This is just this guy sitting there. And I was like, oh my God, you're right out of like an answer to my prayers. It's 11:58. I got to have a cup of coffee right now. And the guy said, okay, here. And he just hands me a cup of iced coffee. And he goes, I'm here for Beyonce. Don't worry about it. No charge. It was great. And then I just chugged coffee. And I was like, man, talk about divine food intervention. That was probably my culinary highlight of training camp.
There you go. I don't know what mine would be. I have to look back at mine.
Do you eat well on the road or do you not eat well on the road?
I try to. I've tried to be better about that because, you know, what ends up happening is I end up eating late a lot, like, which is not good for you to begin with. But like, it's even worse if it's, you know, Wendy's or something.
Yeah.
You know, so I try to like make sure like I'm not, you know, like, and you find places too. Like there was when I was in Seattle, there's a place I ate at super late that was right next to my hotel called The Local, which was really good. So, and you know what? Like the other one was Denver. In Denver, I got in really late and I had like, I've never had a gourmet hot dog before, but I had a gourmet hot dog and I met a friend of mine. Yeah. Yeah. So I had a gourmet hot dog in Denver. So you find weird things, I would say, out of necessity because you wind up in these places. And I think it was like in Denver, it was that like only that they only had the bar menu at the point that I got there. So I had to order off the bar menu, which limited what I could have. And the guy I was with had been there before. So he's like, you need to order the hot dog. And I'm like, am I going to regret this? And there's all kinds of different stuff on, and it was awesome. It was incredible. You know, I'd hesitate to call it the best hot dog I've ever had because I'm still a traditionalist when it comes to hot dogs, but it was really, really good.
What are we talking is on this thing?
It's like pickles and like all this like weird stuff. It's just all this stuff you wouldn't normally have on a hot dog. Like, and I guess pickles would be in relish, right? So like, I probably sound stupid saying that. I don't really even like, there were like four or five different things on it. And all I know was like, I felt great after I ordered it. So, yeah, that place was called Forget Me Not in Denver. It was right across the street from my hotel.
Nice. Dining with, you know, on training camp trips, right? You meet with, you know, maybe it's someone connected to the team to learn a little bit more about stuff. And I always enjoy people who work in football. It's just like, yeah, let's, and it's just a totally normal thing for them. Like, yeah, let's meet at 11:45 at night and have like a full meal of food. You know, it's just, you know, they're energetic and they're just jacked up. And I'm like, dude, I've been in, you know, normal night. I've been in bed for an hour and a half, completely out cold right now. And we're here eating like a full 3-course sushi dinner right now.
I mean, I felt so lucky that I made it through everything without like getting a flight canceled, you know, because of the way air travel is right now. But like, and everything was so tightly wound. Now, a few delays caused me to eat late, but like the stuff that you said about football people being, especially the scouts, are so willing to eat late because they've lived that life too, where they've been forced into those situations. I actually did finally have have something canceled. Thank you, Hurricane. What is it? I know it starts with an I. Idalia, is that right?
I believe so. Aren't we so, like
Hurricane Idalia? Like actually, finally, I finally had a flight canceled. Thankfully, it happened far enough ahead of time where I can. I'm not at the airport when it's happening. You know.
Yeah, Idalia. Oh yeah, here we go. CNN.
Idalia.
Idalia. Yeah, it's gonna be not great. It looks very, very strong, and it says, "Oh wow." The Tampa International Airport on Tuesday
is already closed.
They're shut down. Like the kiosks are wrapped in plastic, like the check-in kiosks.
They wrapped them in plastic?
Yeah, like almost like they were
moving. Like as if like the rain's somehow going to get into the terminal then. And wow.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of storm
like
watchers.
Saran wrap?
Saran wrap. Yeah.
Basically, right? Like, yeah.
And then there's a bunch of storm watchers out there, and we're going to get into your training camp thoughts, but one quick storm watching story. When I was at the Star Ledger.
We're 10 minutes in and we haven't talked about football yet.
Yeah, we're getting there, I promise. Hurricane Irene, I got kind of bussed over to the news side for the newspaper and got dropped off at a Red Cross shelter, and I was like 21, so I was like, yeah, Let station me where the eye of the storm is going to touch down. Who's the guy? Who's the Weather Channel guy that just always gets like blown all over the place? Yeah, I was like, I'm going to Jim Cantore this shit. I'm going to get blown all over the place. And I got a like, wore a garbage bag, and we had a photographer, and we were like, the landfall is going to be right here, and then it just turned into like a tropical storm. So I just got
always the guy that needs to, when something like this is happening, I'm like the guy who needs to go outside and see it for myself. So, like, no matter how bad the storm is, now, I don't think I would if it was a tornado, but, like, otherwise, like, hurricanes and stuff, I always, or a bad snowstorm, I'm the guy who, even now, like, at 43 years old, I have to go outside to kind of feel it for myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gotta, there's a little Jim Cantore in all of us, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Anyway, Albert's been all over the country. I've been all over the Northeast. But I'm more curious as to what you found. I want to start you a piece today about the Rams. We both wrote about LA this offseason. Tell me a little bit about what you think, because this is one of these teams that is just so heavily on my radar. I think that they're going to be so much better than people are talking about. I have a couple of rebound candidates, but I'm curious what you liked from your time there.
I think what's so fascinating about the Rams and the way that Sean McVay's built the staff is how he went outside the family. And, you know, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, but all the guys who've come through that system, what you hear from a lot of them is you almost have to learn it from the grassroots, right? Like, if you really want to run it, if you want to run the Shanahan offense, you have to learn it as like a quality control coach and then move around from position to position and eventually become a coordinator. So you get like the full scope of what it is. And understand the details of it, because the key to it is in the details. And I've had those guys tell me like, oh yeah, like so-and-so can steal the plays all they want, but unless they know how to teach it, it's useless, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I thought like what Sean did this offseason was so fascinating, was that he went outside the family. He went to Michael Fleur, who's part of the family, but the Kyle Shanahan version of it has veered a little bit from the Sean McVay version. So he gets a lot of the Kyle Shanahan stuff from Mike LaFleur, because Mike was with him in San Francisco for 4 years. But then he went outside and he plucked a couple of guys from the Patriot tree. And as much as those two offenses are respected, the Josh McDaniels offense, Josh McDaniels, Charlie Weiss, Bill O'Brien, and the Shanahan McVay offense, as much as those two are like, you know, maybe the two most widespread systems of the last 25 years, the most successful systems from different places over the last 25 years, they're very, very different. So I thought it was so interesting that he went and did that. So when I went in there, I went and talked to those guys, and, you know, not just Sean and Mike LaFleur, but also Ryan Wendell, their new offensive line coach, who played in New England, played for Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, and then coached for Brian Daboll, who worked in the New England system, whose basis is in the New England system. And then Nick Cayley, who was sort of an up-and-comer over the last 10 years in New England and was plucked from John Carroll, actually, which is where a lot of these guys are from, by Josh McDaniels. And the result of that story, Connor, I think the offense is going to look a little different.
I do, too.
Like, and you know what was interesting was, like, everybody talks about the zone running game, right? And like what that is and what that's been over the last 25 years. Well, the Patriot offense is different than that. You know, the Patriot offense, there's more gap scheme runs, which, you know, if people out there don't understand what that means, it's more downhill, like man-to-man blocking. And Kyle Shanahan's done a little bit more of that in San Francisco. So Michael Fleur comes in. He's got that background. Wendell and Cayley come in. They've got the background in New England. So is the run game going to change? And then as far as like what it means for the quarterback, well, you know, the one thing about like the Shanahan system is that it takes so much off the quarterback mentally, right? Like the center makes the mic calls, they go in and there's, all right, the defense says this, you do this, the defense says that, you do that. You know, in New England, it's always been the quarterback makes the protection calls, the quarterback sets everything, the quarterback is, you know, responsible for option routes with all the different receivers, and things can change on the fly, like after the snap. And so like, what does that mean for Matthew Stafford? And is this an effort to maybe get a little bit more out of Matthew Stafford, to evolve that a little bit? So that's what I thought was so interesting about it, is to me, like when you look at the way that Sean McVay is building that staff, when it comes to those guys, there's maybe more diversity in that staff than there ever has been before from any of these guys and where they're plucking guys from and how different ideas are coming into the room. And when I actually sat down and talked to those guys, they were like, yeah, like it's like we didn't want to rush to put this thing together in February and March. So there were times where they'd put a play in and 48 hours later in the spring, it was on the practice field, you know?
Yeah.
So I think if, you know, you're, if you think like the Rams are just going to roll out what they've been doing for the last 6 years under McVay, you might have a few surprises coming. Like, I think that there is going to be some change in the way they do a couple things in an effort to evolve the system. Not to say they won't do the stuff they've always done and been successful with. Of course, they're going to do that. But it does feel like, you know, McVay is trying to kind of build off of what he's already doing schematically.
Yeah. I talked to Ernest Jones, their middle linebacker, and even if you watch it in the preseason, and I'll add some context to this later. Yes, we're talking about the Rams after they got quote unquote blown out 41-0 by the Broncos in the preseason. Let's count and see how many of those guys are actually on the Rams final roster. And yeah, let's match the plays that the Rams are running in the preseason with what they're running in the regular season. There's absolutely, if you're going to debut an offense, why on earth would you debut it in the preseason?
I'd love to see a stat on like the last 5 years, how much Sean McVay's played any starter at all in the preseason.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're, you know, anyway, I talked to Ernest Jones about this and he said that, a couple of guys have come up to him on defense and just been like, dude, when does a practice for a defensive player start to feel normal? Like, when am I going to not feel like shit after every practice? Because, you know, the linebacker, anybody in a tackling situation, you know, who's primarily responsible for marking a ball carrier, you're getting manipulated with this running game. And especially, yeah, I think how it's going to look now, you're just going to get steamrolled. And I think it's building a better defense on the back end of it. But I don't know. I have a just wait kind of thing there where I've been getting kind of some heat for my Rams takes this offseason, but I would say
do you have them in the playoffs?
I don't. So I had them at 9-8.
Okay.
And so I think I had them barely missing the playoffs, but when I predicted all 272 games, but when I got asked for my staff picks, I flipped Seattle and LA. I had LA finishing second to San Francisco.
See, I'm a big Seattle guy this year, so.
Are you?
Mm. Yeah. I have them in the NFC title game.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That Geno Smith did a number on you, huh?
I don't think it's Geno so much. It's Geno. Like, I think Geno gets undersold a little bit. Like, I had one of their coaches say to me, like, we were talking about Geno, and, you know, I've known this guy for a long time, and he's like, yeah, coaching Geno makes me wonder how many other Genos there are out there. Mm-hmm. And his point was, like, okay, like, so the guy had a lot of potential coming into the league, had a really rough couple of years in what I think we can all agree was not a good situation, right? Fell on his face, then everybody assumed he'd never be a starter again. Then he goes and becomes a backup, works his ass off, right? And 5 years later, he gets a shot to start, and oh my God, he looks like a different player. And I guess it's sort of like the Rich Gannon thing, right?
Sure.
Like where we all make final determinations on quarterbacks after like 3 years, and like we act as if they can't grow after that. But sometimes these guys do need to sit. Sometimes maybe these guys shouldn't have started in the first place. They should have sat in the first place, and they should have gone through the Jordan Love thing. But unfortunately, that's a harder thing to execute now with job security being what it is and the importance of the position and the attention on it and everything else. And so I thought that was such an interesting point, like that there could be other guys like this out there that just we think of as like, oh yeah, he's just a backup. When the guy had some talent, played before he should have, and then kind of went back into the well of backup quarterbacks, never to be seen again.
Yeah. No, it's...
But anyway, I'm a big Seattle guy because the rest of the roster, too. I think the roster is a lot better than people realize.
So you have the your NFC West is San Francisco, Seattle, or Seattle, San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco, Seattle. I have the
San Francisco,
Niners beating,
Seattle.
I have the Niners beating the Seahawks in the NFC title game. So it's like a throwback to the old Harbaugh-Carroll rivalry.
Fun. All right, we have a couple more to get to because I do I need some Sam Howell takes. Your thoughts from your time in Washington. Sell me on the Commanders. I got my first introduction to new Commanders owner Josh Harris on the Monday Night Football broadcast. Between that death match between the Commanders and the Ravens.
That the handshake.
Did you see it?
I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah. What I'm here to defend Josh Harris. This is actually I possess a similar massive fear when I'm meeting people for the first time, and every function in my body just completely goes AWOL. And I see someone like, you know, you ever accidentally hug someone? You know, you ever been in that situation? Just how weird that is.
Well, you mean like when somebody goes in, when you go in for the hug and somebody goes in for the hand and somebody's got their hand out like they want a handshake?
This happened to me over the weekend. I was at a friend's party and I saw a friend of a friend of a friend. And, you know, we had some great times. And so I was like, I think I'm going to hug this person. And then the person went in for a handshake, but then read my hug and then did a firm handshake followed by a full on hug just to kind of pacify me. And so I'm one of these people that just shuts down mentally in those situations. So
that's the cousin of the handshake fist pound.
It is
misfire.
It's the southern cousin of the handshake fist pound. Yeah.
Because the handshake fist pound misfire is awfully awkward too.
Oh, it's just
you really don't know what to do with it. You know, your hand's out there, you don't know what to do with it.
If you're gonna fist bump a fully grown adult, you have to lead with it, and you have to be demonstrative from moment one. Like you have to come. Albert and I are on Zoom. Like I'm all the way back. Like I'm throwing a fastball. Right. I'm at the back of my rotation. You have to have the pound coming from this far, because if you don't, and what I've learned,
you're saying that's just fair warning then.
It's fair warning. And what you have to do is, I think you also have to explain it, right? You have to be like, oh, my hands are full, give you a pound. Or what's happening now is, right, you know, we have young kids. Every 2 weeks, there's some sort of viral illness just whipping its way through our house. So I've been a big elbow guy lately, and I've just been like, yep, my kids are sick. But like, I'm telling them from minute one, because I can't stomach the awkwardness.
We had a little hand, foot, and mouth in the house this summer. So I'm with you.
That's what we're dealing with now. Holy smokes. Yeah,
that is one that when you first hear about, like, I feel like I didn't even know about it before I had kids. And then you hear, and it just sounds like the most disgusting thing possible. You know what I mean? Like, so, and I don't know that it's actually that bad, but it just sounds bad.
Yeah. No,
It's not good.
Speaking of viral illnesses, sell me on Sam. No, I'm just kidding. The Commanders are at least noteworthy to me. I don't think the NFC East is going to be a bunch of world beaters this year. I think we could see a little bit of a regression and a rise from certain teams. So I don't know. Sell me on Sam Howell. Tell me what you learned.
Yeah, well, I think what's really fascinating about where the Commanders are going into this year, and I'll plead guilty on the fact that I forgot that they were 500 last year.
It's right?
Like, you kind of had this in your head that like they were a bad team last year. They were 8-8-1. They weren't a bad team last year. So I think what's so interesting about it is how there are so many people in that building with so much on the line right now, and they're trusting a fifth round pick in his second year. And that they put that trust in him so early in the offseason, and they didn't pursue other options at the position outside of Jacoby Brissett, who is a really good professional quarterback, is probably going to play 15 years in the league, but isn't exactly like your quarterback of the future, you know? So, like, in this year, when Ron Rivera and Martin Mayhew and Marty Herney have to show a new owner who they are. And remember, Ron's been in this position before. You know, he was there for the transition to Tepper and wound up getting fired after a year with Tepper in Carolina. That they have that much trust in Sam Howell to be the guy that, yeah, like that's who I'm hitching my wagon to. That's the guy who's going to convince Josh Harris that we are the people to chart the course for his first iteration of the Commanders, you know? So I think that part of it was what fascinated me to begin with. And You know, I just think like a huge piece of it was kind of was, and you know, I'll give you the bridge version, but how his last year at North Carolina went, like a lot of people thought like this is a first or second round pick going into his last year at Carolina. And then they lost, you know, they had a couple running backs drafted, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams. They had a couple of receivers drafted. Dyami Brown's actually there, the Commanders with them. The offensive line didn't play very well. And Carolina, like Mac Brown made the decision, we need to rely on Sam Howell's legs. And so he ran the ball like 15 times a game that year.
Wow.
And like unselfishly, like not worried about my draft stock, I'm just going to go out and play. Took a beating because of it. His passing numbers suffered because of the way they were playing offense. And part of the reason the Commanders took him in the fifth round was because his where they had his grade, which was based on like his entire college career, they were like, we kind of like this kid. That was unselfish what he did last year. And like, we don't really look at that as a negative. And his grade was so far above like where they were picking there in the fifth round. And they had initially not decided not to take a quarterback, in part not to hurt Carson Wentz's feelings. But the grade was up there and it was glaring, you know, like, oh, this guy's still available now. So they take him, and then, you know, slowly but surely over the course of 6 months, 7 months, he keeps checking boxes, and every opportunity he gets, he crushes it. And so, I mean, to me, this is really, really fascinating. Like the idea that, you know, you got this guy drafted in the fifth round who you think is probably who you thought like was a second round talent. And now you're willing to hitch your career to the guy and say, like, Josh Harris has got big decisions to make after this year. And traditionally owners fire everybody after a year. And yeah, like I'm totally content saying Sam Howell is the guy who's gonna pull me out of this and give me more time to build Washington.
If you work in the media industry, which is so like transient, and you know places are always kind of changing hands, you have to root for Ron Rivera, because who hasn't been in this situation? Like all NFL reporters should have at least a decent sort idea of appreciation of what is happening with Ron Rivera right now. Like my first job, there was like eight different times where someone came in and was like, oh, we're in charge now and we're doing things completely different. And you're just like, yes, okay, great.
He's been through it twice. I mean, yes. You know what I think is interesting about it too, Connor, is like, I do think that there's a larger trend. I wrote about this earlier in the off season, but like, I think there was a pushing back on the idea of paying like second tier quarterbacks $30 or $40 million a year. And like going into this offseason, Daniel Jones, Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr were all set to hit the market. And, you know, obviously Jones would have been franchised, but those are the names that were out there when, you know, you're doing your planning in January and February for your team. And there were three teams that legitimately just consciously decided we're going the other way and we're going to go with a lower round pick as our starting quarterback, and we're going to bring in a proven veteran, a guy who's got starting experience but isn't going to cost us $40 million to compete with them. And so like that's what Washington, Atlanta and Tampa did. And you know, I think a really smart executive compared it to what happened in the NBA with max contracts, like I don't know how many years ago, where everybody on every NBA team, like every NBA team had like a guy in a max contract. And then at some point, like it's like almost like they collectively decided like there aren't that many max players to go around, and right, the market matured. And maybe that's what's happened to quarterback now. It's like, yes, Patrick Mahomes is worth whatever you want to pay him. Yes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, like Jalen Hurts, like those guys are worth it, right? But like that doesn't mean like the second tier guy is worth almost as much. And so I think there's an interesting experiment going on with that, like now, you know, with Washington and Atlanta and Tampa. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
The Carolina Panthers are, so I'm kind of like, I don't know if I'm We had a Breer map graphic. I know. I did see that with your face going all up and down the United States. Did you see that?
Horrifying.
It is. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about when they take psychedelic drugs, they have a life-changing experience. My fear is that I would just see that. I would see your face just see on like a map from, of America, and I wouldn't be able to come back from that. But so I don't know if I'm actually going in order of the tour, but I'm going on in order of teams that I care about. I'm asking you about Bryce Young. I loved him in the preseason. I thought his decisiveness was fantastic. What can you tell me about kind of the imprint that he's already made on the organization in Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I know like he would tell you that it's a result of where he came from and playing in big time programs, both in high school and college. You know, going from modern day, which people don't know is like one of the I looked this up. This is a crazy stat. They have more Heisman Trophy winners at that high school than all but five colleges.
Wow.
So he went from that type of high school program to Alabama into the pros. But a guy who was pro ready when he got there. And, you know, I know Frank Reich said to me, like, he saw it almost right away, you know, like in how he conducted himself, how he had an easy way of leading. And, you know, I think like you could see it like early in the preseason. And, you know, I was at CJ Stroud's and CJ got a lot better, you know, over the last couple of weeks. But that first game against New England, if you watch CJ Stroud operate back there, you could tell the wheels are turning in his head and he was doubting what he was looking at, right? Like, and it took him like, and then he throws the bad pick because he was late and he got better over time. Like his last two games, he got better. I think like with Bryce, what you saw was from the very beginning, like you can see it the way he stands in the pocket, you know, and like how calm he looks. It just looks like he belongs. Now, is he going to be able to stand up to the physical rigors of playing in the NFL with his frame? I think it's a fair question to ask, but you know, like I think just the readiness for every facet of playing in the NFL is what it is with Bryce Young. It's the readiness to be a leader, the readiness to be the face of a franchise, and the readiness to go out there and translate what he's learned in the practice field and in the meeting rooms onto the game field. I think all of that is there. And it's like, to me, like that thing, that like intangible thing is what separated him from the pack, what separated him from CJ Stroud and Anthony Richardson and Will Levis. And it's certainly shown up for the Panthers the last 6 months.
Yeah. I'd like
for four months. I don't know my math's off there. 4 months since they drafted him.
Bryce too. It's a weird thing to say. Maybe it's a tropey scout thing to
and
say.
You were around him a lot. So you can explain this better than me.
I really think that the thing that really made me feel better about the preseason was the fact that, you know, and I had scouts tell me this, he falls well. And and I watched him get clobbered by the Jets in that first preseason game, and he does like it's in the best possible way.
The Jets thought, like one of the Jets guys told me, they thought they broke his collarbone on one of those hits.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he was getting crushed, but in the best possible way. It is like tortoise like, where like the head goes in the shell, everything, all the limbs pop into the shell, and he just falls.
I remember
to the ground.
Brady explaining it as the fetal position.
It is. It's like
it sort of is.
He folds up like a beach chair.
Yeah.
If I had only known that in high school when I got, you know, life as a 5 foot six and a half, 160 pound offensive lineman was not good. And all I had to do was fold up. I probably would have had a better chance at stopping pass rushers too if I just did that. They would have fallen over me, you know?
I like it. I like it.
Talk about regrets. Give me one more because I don't know if you guys know this, but this is a big day for me and Albert, because not only are we taping an NFL podcast, we have back to school orientation today. So we're
That's
talking
right.
football, and we're also talking about, it's funny, coaches have good messages, and then our school, we have a slogan just like an NFL team has every year. So I'm getting fired up. I know you're about to get ready to get fired up. So.
Yeah, the cut down is at 4 p.m. Eastern. The school walkthrough is at 3:30 Eastern. So I will be walking into the school, and I may be a bit antisocial, But I've decided to backburner the 65th guy on some roster today for my child's well-being. It's a decision I'm going to stand by here. Hopefully there aren't. There's one potential trade that may cause me to walk away from
right.
the goings on. Hopefully that one doesn't happen at 3:45 or something.
I was texting about Jonathan Taylor during the bus portion of the orientation. So if I might be driving my kid to school for the first couple days. Just so everyone knows, we're taping this before a potential the deadline for a Jonathan Taylor trade is a couple hours after we're taping this.
I think just to kind of, whether it happens or not, like, I just think it's more complicated than people realize for a team to give him a new contract and give up the draft compensation. I think if it was one or the other, then this thing would happen. And I do wonder, Connor, and this may be moot by the time this thing posts, but if a team is willing to meet the financials on Taylor, right? Like, if there's a team that's willing to go where it needs to go to get Jonathan Taylor to agree to a contract, but then isn't willing to meet the draft pick compensation for the Colts, what an awkward situation that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because now Jonathan Taylor is no longer guessing at his worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now he knows what the Colts are keeping him away from.
Yeah. No, that's we could be prepping for World War III, which is running back World War III, which is fun. It's I had one NFL person tell me, he's like, God, you guys are writing a lot about the running back thing. And he's like, it seems like pretty low hanging fruit at this point that really.
Have you gotten a lot of like the what about the guards? What about the centers?
I've gotten
what
a
about
lot
the
of
off ball linebackers.
I've you gotten a lot I mean? Of like, well, that and there actually are. It was funny. Someone in the league asked me to look it up. They said, "What is their total running back value versus the cap over time? Has it gone up or down?" I'm not talking about what they're making right now. I'm talking historically over time. What have they made versus a percentage of the cap? And then like 10 minutes later, Steve Cannell, our executive editor, called me and he was like, hey, I was just Googling something, you know, I was just looking this up for fun. And it turns out like they're not really getting in relative terms, getting hosed, right? Because their percentage of the salary versus the cap has not gone down. I think it's actually stayed stagnant. It has not gone up, but it stayed consistent over time as a positional salary.
This is also not a new argument.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
This is like, I think this goes back to those Shanahan Broncos teams, right? Like where they had, it didn't matter who they plugged in there, right? And there's always been that argument that like, you get the prime of a running back's career while he's on his rookie contract. Like, this isn't new. Like, this has been going on for a while. It just so happened that I wonder how much of this is just the way the news cycle works now, where on July 15th, we had nothing else to talk about except for Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs. So then it became a huge deal on that day. And sort of the events of that day have carried out over the last 6 weeks, in part because of that, in part because Jonathan Taylor's situation bubbled up and, you know, boiled over a couple of weeks after it. You know, it's interesting. And by the way, I'm board with paying Jonathan Taylor. If I'm the Colts, like I think you do that for your young quarterback. I think it puts you in second and six and third and two a lot more. It makes it so your young quarterback isn't, you know, the focal point of the offense for defenses. Like, I would do it as sort of an investment in my young quarterback. The same way like Zeke Elliott was an investment in Dak Prescott, the same way that Todd Gurley helped Jared Goff. Like I think like he can be that for you. But obviously this thing's gotten way, 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 way more complicated than just what Jonathan Taylor can mean for Anthony Richardson.
If anybody's going to find out what's going to happen, it's not going to be me, because I guess that Jim Irsay was 78 in our podcast last week. And it turns out, good old Jim's in his mid-60s. So sorry about that again, or maybe even early 60s. So I'm just going to ask you rapid fire three quick questions, and then I'm going to kick you out of here. Biggest surprise from your training camp tour?
It's a good question. I think Atlanta's got a chance to be really good. I think, like, you look at it and their offensive line should be good. They've got good skill players. And I sort of look at, like, Atlanta and Seattle. I put them in the same bucket. I have Atlanta winning the NFC South. I put them in the same bucket in that I think everybody is so obsessed with quarterbacks now that they miss everything else. And you're so quick when you don't see, like, a guy who was drafted in the top half of the first round and has made Pro Bowls, when you don't see that guy, like, entrenched as a starting quarterback, you just have a tendency to dismiss the team. And I'm not arguing quarterback's more important than it's ever been, right? Like, because of the rules, because of the way the game works, because of how kids are brought up, all that different stuff. But I just think Atlanta, like, that was, to me, like, I look around and I'm like, they're kind of deep at corner. They have some guys I like up front on defense. They're deeper all over the place. The offensive line is good. They've got all these interesting weapons that will allow them to play, like, this positionless game on offense. It was like one of those things where the light came on for me, and I'm like, I think Arthur Smith's a really good coach, and he's got, like, some tools finally, and he's going to figure it out. And, oh, by the way, they were pretty good at the beginning of last year before their depth caught up with them, and I think the roster's better, so that would be my answer.
Not disaster in waiting. I like to be a little bit more friendly to anybody else, but what was the situation where you kind of came away being like, I don't know about this one?
So the second time I saw the Colts, I saw them twice because they were there when I was with the Eagles. And I know you like them too. I think Shane Steichen's going to make it work in time. I just think there are a lot of ifs with them. Like, if the Jonathan Taylor situation resolves itself, if Bernard Raymond is the answer at left tackle, if some things happen for them on the edge, if they're able to replace Stephon Gilmore at corner, I just look at it and I'm like, they still have good players. Like, Quentin Nelson's still there. DeForest Buckner's still there. Obviously Shaq Leonard's still there. So they still have, like, players that you like, but I just look at, it's like, there's just way too many ifs there, you know? And so, like, they're the one team where I look at them and I'm like, I didn't think going to their camp that this is a real rebuild year. And it felt to me like this is like, oh God, this is a real rebuild year. And I think the noise with the Taylor thing is going to be tough for Shane too. Like, that's a real challenge. Like, I like Jim Irsay, but, you know, like, and I think he's, like, generally been a good guy to work for the people there. But man, I think he put Shane Steichen in a tough spot by going to war with Taylor. Like, no matter what you think of his value, right? Like, no matter what you think of his value or what paying a running back is in 2023, that is one of the most respected, productive, talented, liked guys in that locker room. And when you're a first-year head coach, your job is to get guys like that on board, because guys like that on board is, like, basically your ability, it unlocks your ability to get the whole roster on board, right?
Yep.
Like, let's show who we pay. Let's show who we reward. Jonathan Taylor is that guy.
Yeah.
And I think that this situation puts Shane Steichen in a really difficult position, because he's the one who ultimately has to explain this to the other guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and other guys understand that it's business, but this is still, like, a guy that they love, respect, like, in a lot of cases, the younger players look up to, right? And, I mean, I just think, you know, in situations like this, a lot of times, like, a younger player can be like, well, if they're treating him like that, like, what does that mean for me?
Yeah.
And it's not Shane's fault at all.
Yeah. Jim Irsay, if you want to be thought of as a good owner, you get down there and you give a couple Jonathan Taylor press conferences instead of, you know, making your coach do that, which you could argue is part of the deal, but I don't know. That's not my take on it. And last one, how many Dunkin' Donuts cups of coffee exploded on you? I know you've been I know you've been anti
the coffee cup thing. Is like, it makes me so angry.
The root of, like, it, just so people
look,
don't,
like,
know.
I'm all for, like, the environmental, like, the style, huh?
So the root of it, just so our viewers, Dunkin' Donuts transferred from the styrofoam cup to a paper cup. In Albert's, in your world, this has sort of rocked you. I will say this, just so you know. My friends and I bought 500 styrofoam cups because we were having, like a party once, and we thought it would be wild to make a bunch of mixed drinks out of styrofoam cups and like carry like three or four styrofoam cups around at once. And so I still have them. And so that's what I have my coffee in sometimes, because we're in the process of moving things around. So we don't have access to our mugs right now. So I am enjoying a nice locked and sealed styrofoam cup of coffee every morning. I'm trying to be responsible with the disposal of it, but I'm just letting you know I have that.
And full disclosure, people probably know this, but I live in a part of the country where there are legitimately Dunkin' Donuts across the street from each other. You know what I mean? Like there's two or three, it feels like, per town up here. And if you go into Boston, I bet there are like over 100 of them inside the Boston city limits. So in a lot of cases, like if you want a cup of coffee, like that might be your only option, depending on where you are. Like for a company that's so successful to not be able to figure out how to keep the coffee in the cup and to keep the, and those brown marks on the outside of the cup, that's not just like a thing, like I don't like the way it looks. That equals like coffee running down your hand when you're picking up the cup. Mm-hmm. And then you try to put it in the cup holder. And when you lift it up out of the cup holder, you know what you find? A little pool of coffee with everything else that you had in that cup holder, whether it's little pieces of dirt, quarters, whatever was in there, is now in a pool of coffee.
I do
figure
hate that.
It out.
I do hate
figure
that.
It out. Like you didn't make the switch from styrofoam cups yesterday. And I don't understand why so many other people, like, does Starbucks have this problem? And I'm not wild about Starbucks coffee, but I don't think so. I don't see a bunch of people walking around with like brown streaks down their styrofoam cups. They're on their Starbucks cups.
Mm. That's a good question. I almost never order hot coffee. Very, like if I make it at home, I have to have it hot because it's just timing wise.
Yeah.
But I'm an iced coffee person. So
even in the winter?
Oh yeah, all year round. 100%.
Wow.
Colder the better.
Okay. So I actually, like, when I've complained about this, a couple people have blamed private equity. So I'll have to look into that.
Ah. Yes. Well, producer Shelby says styrofoam is clearly worse. So I'd like to hear leave us a rating and review and let us know if you'd like an entire episode of Albert and producer Shelby fighting about the structural soundness
cup
of
wars.
Coffee cups. Yeah. That's all the questions I got for Albert, but be sure to read his mailbag on SI.com this week. Albert, enjoy orientation. I had a rockin' time today. This year, our theme is we're going to be the coffee bean, because the coffee bean, when boiled, unleashes untold energy. So
our top piece of advice for the year would be eat dinner alone.
Eat dinner alone, be the coffee bean, hop on the energy bus, and just enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Be safe. The MMQB NFL podcast is produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit, and Rec League basketball three-point assassin Gary Gramling are the founders of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.